welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, 2020 certainly caught a lot of businesses off guard with the rapid adoption of digital platforms, ecosystems, and consumer shifting behavior. Now, with the rapid change also came changes in security as well. But what is the right approach when it comes to security and, in particular, identity verification? Is it a one-size-fits-all model? A layered approach? And what is the best for creating a superior customer experience? So to help answer these questions and others, I'm joined by Daniel Patterson, who is the VP of Customer Success at Trulioo, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot of great data and insights to unpack on today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show. So Daniel and Tim, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. We're going to be taking a deep dive look really into identity verification here and how it's really kind of no longer a checkbox compliance exercise. And now, Daniel, I know that your organization has some really interesting data that I think is very good to kind of point out, as I think it will kind of help set the table for the rest of this discussion here. So perhaps maybe you could kind of unpack some of those high-level data points.
Absolutely, Tim. Happy to. I think there are two McKinsey reports that I would reference in this regard. In 2018, when they looked at the estimation of, let's call it the current identity verification as a service market size, we were looking at a $10 billion value with a prediction of a growth to 16 to 20 by 2022. Now, while that sets the table at a macro level, I think we can all agree that the events of last year drastically changed that. And an October 2020 report considered the impact of COVID-19 as accelerating the digital economy, therefore, of course, identity verification as a service by almost 7 years.
Yeah, the rise in synthetic identity has driven a incredible interest in how to identify who it is who's opening the account. And it also impacts, from a financial institution perspective, their BSA requirements.
Yeah, and I mean, I certainly think that when you're kind of unpacking those stats there, I mean, it just shows the size of the scope of what's really going on here. And as you pointed out, you know, and we've kind of talked about all throughout 2020, and I think it's going to be a good portion of a vast majority of the conversations. I mean, just how much COVID-19 has really accelerated just the digital economy and kind of the digital adoption. It's certainly been one of those things that it's always kind of been there. The tools are made available, but COVID-19 really was that accelerant to push consumer usage behavior in that direction. But with really kind of all that being said, I'm curious then as to why, and Daniel, if we could get you to respond to this first, why should identity verification be a strategic priority and investment for businesses?
Great question. I think, you know, while 2020 was very much a transformative time, it was a long time coming, and it really just accelerated pieces that had already been in place. And while we've seen some great examples of organizations translate their brick and mortar strategy to online, even online brands themselves need to strengthen their own processes due to just the overwhelming demand of, let's say, consumers taking their own financial future into their own hands. And I think here at Trulioo, we've just seen a lot of examples where organizations were a little blindsided by the mass user adoption of their platform. You know, something that they've always dreamed about, I'm sure, but something that they really weren't prepared for. And I think if you look at every single individual person, you know, we rely a lot on our digital devices to complete many everyday tasks, our banking now, our shopping, accessing critical services. And I think consumers, especially as you look at what happened in the past year, they're a lot more, let's say, willing to, or sometimes even forced to, complete these transactions online from the comfort of their own home, opening accounts, sharing sensitive information in order to get access to these services. But at the end of the day, it all comes back to trust. And that's something that underpins a lot of the conversations that I have with our customers and that my team has with customers. And trust means identifying the individuals that are using services, building trust and safety into the online community that's using, let's say, a particular service, while also, of course, ensuring compliance with international anti-money laundering regulations and the like, and of course, delivering a positive user experience, which will start with onboarding, but of course, needs to be maintained through the lifetime that someone is using an online service.
Every company has its own kind of risk profile about what they're willing to accept in the way of risk, but identity is definitely within that risk profile and has become more and more important, and especially as digital onboarding has become common. I think it was McKinsey who estimated digital onboarding has increased by ahead 7 years because of COVID. So, you know, understanding how to manage identity in that new world is critical.
Yeah, one of the things, Daniel, that you pointed out there that I certainly think is kind of interesting is just really the rapidness of the shift that really happened in the industry and kind of the organizational rush to meet these new demands that were out there. You know, like kind of I said at the beginning of it, is that, you know, a lot of these tools, and especially, you know, the e-commerce side of things has been around for a while, and you started to see a slow increase in kind of a normal increase in kind of adoption and more usage. And when you kind of take a look at it, say, from like a merchant perspective, say, and where you could kind of look at it and say like, okay, well, 80% of my business comes from in-store shopping versus 20% online. Well, okay, how much resources am I going to dedicate towards, you know, kind of shoring up that online experience when it's really only generating 20% of the revenue? But really with COVID, we've kind of almost taken that model and flipped it on its head, where a vast majority of your sales are coming through online. And therefore, you need to kind of almost rush to make sure that all of these new policies and procedures and verifications are put in place to make sure that you don't have a significant loss on that end. But I'm also kind of curious, Daniel, you know, what do businesses really need to consider to ensure that their compliance and KYC and KYB programs can remain resilient in an increasingly digital first world?
I would say the first piece of advice that we give to our customers, if they don't do this already, is certainly to make digital onboarding or the KYC or IBV component of onboarding a priority. And that's not just a priority from a compliance standpoint, but a priority from a entire company standpoint. Again, we see way too many customers playing catch up and being forced into a remediation scenario when a little bit more investment upfront in digital onboarding would have helped prevent these types of scenarios. At the same time, of course, businesses need to be flexible. Very, very easy to say that you need to make digital onboarding a priority, but it really depends on what users are actually doing on your platform. And I think the most successful businesses that we work with are flexible in their approach as they learn things about maybe this new end user demographic or this new cohort of individual that are starting to use their platform. So flexibility according to a risk tolerance level is certainly key. I think in order to do this, any business needs to assess what are the operational risks, what are the business risks in any given decision, and more so really understanding the nuances of unique market demographics, especially if they're a global player. Some of the organizations that we work with, you know, very, very savvy in a particular, let's say, North American market that they work with, but as they're looking to expand globally, not only do they need to understand what the you know, regulatory implications are in each region that they operate in, but more so understand what is the maturity of the data market? What are people willing to share as a part of an onboarding process in that market? And it can really differ whether you're operating in North America or, of course, over in Europe. When it gets down to the actual nuts and bolts of executing your digital onboarding program, I think relying on multiple options is always going to be key. Our most successful have a nuanced and a layered approach to this, where they know that they can, let's say, scale up resources in one market or for one particular demographic as things change. And I think if you look at what options are out there in order to support the identification of these people coming onto your platform, you can look at new technology that really focuses on the mobile device as the platform for this, whether it's geolocation data, whether it is information about that device, or other verification tools that are connected directly to these global mobile network operators, in addition, of course, to your biometrics or, of course, behavioral markers that you can see from these users being onboarded. So it's there are certainly a lot of options, but I think ensuring that you remain flexible in your approach is really what we're seeing from our most successful customers.
Tim, did you have anything you wanted to add there?
Yes. Sorry about that. I was considering as you were talking. You know, it's fascinating that security right now, both physical as well as internet and identity, are top topics in the market today. And in every instance, it's a layering approach that's used and found most effective to be able to protect assets. And, you know, it's a tad more difficult with identity because of all the different credentials and data sources, new, some old, some new, such as mobile and behavioral, that can be applied to that layered approach. But again, understanding what the risk profile is and then selecting those right data sources and the right credentials is the right way to figure out how to lock down that identity to the level of risk you're comfortable with.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, you know, some of those points and really kind of the global perspective that you brought up there, Daniel. You know, I always find that part of the story certainly very fascinating because I think my mind particularly sometimes gets trapped into thinking, oh, well, okay, the way that it's done or identity verification or the amount of data that's available for individuals that's set up in, say, North America is the same across the globe. And that's not really the case. And you really have to understand that aspect of it as well, too. And also to the point that Tim pointed out in terms of just a layered approach here. You know, the more and more conversations that I have around identity verification, that seems to be like the guess I get kind of main key word that is used across all of those conversations is really that layered approach. But with that really kind of then in mind, Daniel, I'm curious how it is that you can really measure the business impact and success of an identity verification program. So like what are the key metrics that if I'm kind of assessing all identity verification programs kind of across, say, a spreadsheet here, what are those key metrics that I should really be looking at and focusing on when making my decision?
Metrics are super important in terms of the success of an onboarding program or the success of a digital identification strategy. And we see a wide variety from customers depending on the vertical that they consider themselves to operate in. You can look at the customer acquisition rate. You can look at average spends on platform. End user growth via referrals, all of these classic indicators, you know, measuring how close you are perhaps to critical mass or adoption from an end user standpoint in your particular segment. One fallacy that I do see that should be, articulated with a point of caution is a 100% match rate. Let's say in digital identity verification, when maybe customers that are in a startup phase or new in their journey, we sometimes see an over-indexing on identifying successfully every single end user on the platform. And it's a mistake in many ways, but mostly simply because that should not be your goal, to ensure that you know absolutely everything about every single individual on your platform. Rather, a focus on where users are adding the most value to services, or rather where they are spending larger portions, or where they are in the, let's say, best situation to refer other end users to their business, can certainly be more important. But it really all starts with account opening. That's the initial stage of the customer journey. And this is where you start to build, or you immediately lose trust with the customer. And this is the source of loyalty building. Customer experience specialists need to be involved, I think, in all of the elements of this journey, creating tone, creating particular language, gauging user sentiments through engagement, just to ensure that you are always reevaluating what the experience is of end users on your platform. Perhaps another metric just to throw out there would be time to verify. And I think this is important, again, when you look at what people's first impression are, is rather of your brand or of your app or of your platform. And this, of course, needs to be broken down across demographics, geographies, and different markets, because this will lead you to a better understanding of abandonment and where you need to invest in order to ensure that users are ushered into your platform and into different buckets where they're deriving the most value from your service. So I think we see that any customer that's taking a data-driven approach to this, an approach that considers all of these factors, we see these customers in general being quite successful. But of course, you know, tying a verified user to a valuable user really, really depends on, you know, the individual business.
It's an interesting issue that validating the accuracy of the identity verification can be difficult, because a common strategy criminals use is a bust out strategy where it isn't immediately obvious that you've onboarded a fraudulent individual. And so looking longer term at the fraud that you've been able to prevent and whether you've been able to bring those numbers down is certainly the approach that's necessary to be able to validate the worth of the identity process you've implemented.
You know, I'm curious, you know, we're certainly diving in a lot around the identity verification platform specifics part of it, but there's also that other main component to it as well, too, and that's also the consumer experience part of it here. So, Daniel, if I could get from you, from your perspective, what do today's consumers ideally want with their onboarding experience with online businesses?
I think when you look at the average consumer today and you try to generalize across all demographics, across, let's say, all markets in the world, the common denominator is impatience. And whether that is myself, whether that is my parents, whether that's my peers, I think the abundance of choice that today's consumers have fosters this impatience and a desire for as perfect of an onboarding experience as possible, which of course makes it difficult for organizations in a regulatory space, because there is no option other than to have some kind of friction in order to meet your regulatory requirements. So when I look back, we recently were a part of a report here at Trulio looking at consumer account opening. And the report revealed that 90% of people feel that a secure account creation process, one which validates their identity, protects against fraud and identity theft, is very, very important. And I think it's an obvious statement to say that people want to trust services. However, it's very, very easy to lose that trust via a poor first impression or perhaps negative mouth review. And for anyone that's building software, unfortunately, you can never get it perfect the first time. You have to iterate. So what does that mean when it comes to onboarding people and adhering to regulatory requirements? I think if you look, let's say, at a financial services firm using real-time identity verification as part of their account creation process, according to our report or our study, more than 80% are less likely to abandon, 84% will have greater trust in the brand, and 71% are more likely to share more personal data when there is a identity verification component that just hits that right balance between not enough friction to give the impression that something is not secure versus too much friction, meaning they can't even get into the app to get a taste of the services or be able to use it and derive value in any meaningful way. So balancing that security expectation with introducing a reasonable or healthy amount of friction is certainly key. And that enables an organization, whether it's a bank or an online marketplace or payments platform, to appropriately classify users with a risk profile, and then of course escalate users that should be flagged for further investigation or perhaps manual, more expensive review further on down the line. So you need to have a very nuanced approach to turning that tap on and off to ensure that you are, of course, onboarding as many users as possible, but there is an element of friction there that hits the right balance between security and trust. And I think that, we've seen some customers do that very, very well. However, we've seen other customers maybe reach towards new technologies without enough vetting or without enough experience. And going back to an earlier point, flexibility, learning, and changing is key, of course, as you learn these new things about your end users.
You know, those are all great points, Daniel. You think about the other side of the coin from identity, which is an authentication. And financial institutions and others are moving to risk-based authentication to try to minimize the amount of friction that a customer has to go through, depending on how risky the particular transaction actually is. And as the value goes up, you apply stronger authentication processes. And I think that's true on the identity side as well. There are those financial institutions and others that are regulated and have to put the customer through a very high bar right away before onboarding that customer. But for some others, it's possible that you take a look at the risk profile and you start filling it out over time, the identity profile. Start collecting information a little bit at a time as you engage that customer. That can include the biometrics and the information about the device, but can also go to collecting identity credentials as well. Don't necessarily have to do it all at once.
Yeah, I really like that point. And Dina, I think you kind of said it best when you called it reasonable friction. And to me, that just makes the most amount of sense. You know, you don't need the same level of verification for an individual that maybe is just initially signing up for your application or kind of in the initial stages of onboarding versus somebody who's looking to make a $20,000 transaction that's going cross border. Those two parts of it don't have to have the same amount of friction embedded into them. And as you were kind of pointing up, kind of that step up approach that as your consumer is looking to gain access to more and more features or different functionality that they want to use, at that point in time, it allows for that reasonable friction that an individual can understand, oh, well, this is why I'm being challenged, because there's this additional component or there's kind of this bump up that I'm looking to use within the application. So from just a consumer experience standpoint, it's reasonable for the consumer to be able to sit there and say, okay, like I'm not being asked the 600 questions up front. They're kind of spaced out to me over time as I use the application. And maybe there are certain parts that I don't need to use, and therefore I don't need to go down that route or give up as or you or put in as many kind of the challenges or any of the information that the application might ask if it was kind of a, hey, we need everything up front. But with that being said, Daniel, Tim, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about identity verification. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Daniel.
My pleasure.